needs, this network gets. I promise you that.
The one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
Mercy, this is professional wrestler Jimmy Valiant, the Boogie Woogie Man. Tell my people, my brothers and sisters, don't you dare miss Turnbuckle Throwback Radio, Rant EM Radio. Oh, yeah!
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents
the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast
with your hosts,
the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
Thank you all for coming down to Rocky's tonight. You've been listening to Matt Stone and the Moontones. Take a bow, fellas, for the Moontones. Let's hear it for the Moontones. Now, can we get a little something for the ladies over there? Did such a fine job. Looking good. We will be here every weekend for your enjoyment. And we hope to see you all again real soon.
The place is dead, Bruno. I'm taking off. Lock the place up for me.
Okay, Rock. See you later, babe.
Put a whole bunch of effort into this. I really do.
So do I. It's Bruce Willis. It's the return of Bruno, and it's the return of the Mega Powers.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and everyone in between, we are your recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting from the current to the way back. We be the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Ray, and I am joined by
the Mega Powers.
Bruce Willis. I had music planned out, but of course Dave once in a while throws me for a loop. he puts Bruce Willis, and I was like, you know what? That'll work.
Hey man, you know, I respect myself. I respect yourself. I respect everybody's self.
I respect everybody's self too, and it's a really, honestly, in the current climate that we're in, as we talked about in pre-production, I think it's only fitting that we play that. respect goes a long way in anything you do, whether professionally, personally, recreationally.
Or in terms of Bruce Willis. Yes.
When I was a kid, the big thing in my house was moonlighting. A little before you...
I love that show.
Well, now you do, but you were like three when it came out. However...
I was watching it then, too.
I'm sure you were. It was a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, Wednesday nights were a big deal in a Raya house. I remember I had to go, I was like 14 or 13 or whatever, 14. And I was at a Catholic school at that point, but my mom still made me do the religious instruction thing to finish my sacraments or whatever. If you're Catholic, you know what I'm talking about. But every Wednesday night...
Act of contrition.
Right, exactly. So I had to go to CCD class, and then I had to run home and not miss moonlighting. Even though it was a school night, you get home like 8, 9 o'clock at night, you know, you had to make sure you watched moonlighting before you went to bed.
All I got to say is, you know, Bruce Willis must have been atomically white hot heat huge if they let him put out this shitty album. And well, then have it was like an HBO special and the Return of Bruno as well?
I think so. I really didn't follow his music career that much. You followed it a lot more than I did, apparently.
Yes.
So, by the way, when people hear this, Dave, we will be live.
Yes.
On Rant EM Radio, rantentertainmentmedia.com. I would say other spiel, but I can't anymore, so we'll just keep it as that. We're on the rant. It is December the 4th. I think it is now.
Yeah, December 4th. Happy birthday to my buddy, Zach Evanesh.
Happy birthday, Zach Evanesh. Happy birthday to Jigga Man, Brooklyn's own Jay-Z. December 4th, having a birthday today.
The Jigga Man,
the
huh?
Jigga Man, that's right. Mossy Projects, nothing nice. I was going to play, you know, Jay-Z, but I guess Bruce Willis trumped him tonight. So,
well, some things are more important.
Sometimes, yeah. I'm not mad at him at all. All right, so we hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. I enjoyed my Thanksgiving. Did you?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, ate like an animal, right?
I had Thanksgiving dinner at two different places. So.
See, I didn't do that this year. I was. Dude, you'd be proud. I barely ate. I was good. I had like a plate. I was like, yeah, I'm going to be an animal this year. I didn't eat.
Just stick to that protein and those vegetables and be good.
And I'm good with it, yeah.
Carbs.
Well, I did have bad carbs. I had some pie. You know, it was homemade, like... My friend's mom, she like made it from the pump, like scratch, like didn't buy the shit can, the pumpkin.
Uh-huh.
She like took the pumpkin, carved it up, boiled it, you know, pureed it, and fucking made a pie out of it.
Okay.
It's really good stuff. So listen, we got a lot of stuff lined up for you, man. We really, really do. Here's what's going to be going down the next couple of weeks. I know tomorrow night, I think I'm hosting the Wrestling Call-In Show. I'm hosting it because Mr. Morgan is going to be off. So if you want
to, what the hell's he doing?
Who knows what he's doing?
How can you be off on a Saturday night at 11 p.m.?
Well, I know he has like seven kids, so I'm sure maybe.
Oh my God!
I'm joking. I think he has one or two, but either way, he has seven kids, and we'll keep it at seven. And he's probably busy.
Man has 18 kids. Yeah, Jesus Christ!
Exactly. So I'll be filming. I'm sure the usual cast of characters will be calling in. You're welcome to call in if you want. Of course, nobody cares about current wrestling. So hopefully we'll do like a nice throwback to tomorrow night. December the 18th. Well, next week we have a kick-ass throwback for you. I'm not even going to tell you what next week is going to be, but December 18th, around that time, I'll be putting out a pre-show for Ring of Honor's Final Battle pay-per-view.
That's going to be interesting because AJ Styles has some back problems lately.
He does, but the New Japan doctor checked him out and he's okay, apparently, according to Twitter today. But we'll get into that. We'll get into that in a few minutes. And I wanted to. The pay-per-view was the night of a show, so I was gonna opt out of the show and just watch the pay-per-view. We may still do that, but either way, you might get a throwback and a pre-show, or you might get just a pre-show, and then we'll get like a pre-recorded pre-show, and then we'll do a throwback. Either way.
Okay.
December 23rd is our Malcolm Xmas Spectacular.
I can't wait.
I just got the throwback delivered to me, hand-delivered to me. It's going to be insane. Just the cover alone is amazing.
And the back of it is.
And the back of it is even funnier. So I know we're going to have at least minimum one or two Wizards in studio that night. I can't guarantee everybody else. There's some stuff going on internally. I hope that all gets worked out prior. I hope it gets worked out, period. And
It will.
And then it'll be fine. And I think we'll have a great time like we always do. We're going to exchange gifts again this year, which I'm pretty excited about. I spoke to Tony last night.
I can't wait to re-gift Tony's presents back to him this year.
Wow. You're a nice guy. What a nice guy.
I'm kidding.
Let's see.
Or am I?
Or am I, yeah. December 19th is the, I think, the paper, Tables, Ladders, and Chairs pre-show on the Rant. Check that out. Go to rantemradio.com. There's all your good stuff there. TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com has all your shit there, all the backup episodes, and support all the other shows that we're a part of on that on that website. All right. So we have a really cool kick. Dave said to me the other day, he goes, I really didn't notice how good this pay-per-view actually was until I watched it again. It was okay, so we'll get into that. We got a really cool throwback
for you
that we've been holding off like 3 weeks because we want to do it together, and that's pretty cool. I enjoyed that.
Yes.
So we got a couple of news items I want to throw by Dave. Dave already mentioned AJ Styles having some back problems, and he has a huge title match at Wrestle Kingdom this year, next year, January.
Yeah. And doesn't he have the world title match for ROH too?
For Final Battle against Jay Lethal.
Is that even a world title?
It is a world title.
Okay.
Yeah. Not according to some wrestling magazines, or the marks, but it's still.
Does it say world on the title?
You're fucking right, it does.
Okay.
Now, according to Twitter, early this morning around 7:30, the New Japan team doctor, I forgot his name already. It starts with an M. I don't want to.
Dr. X. I don't know. Miyamoto.
Maya something. I forget his name. But he's like the team doctor for New Japan Pro Wrestling. He said x-rays on AJ Styles' back, negative.
All right.
In his best English. Because he typed out, like, they translated it. It says, yeah. X-ray AJ Styles' back, negative. I was like, okay, thanks, doc. So, came from the horse's mouth. AJ Styles had some back problems, and I don't know, because in this current climate right now, there's a couple of guys being scouted by the E. I'm hearing AJ Styles is re-scouted again. I heard Jay Lethal's been scouted by NXT.
What's his face?
Oh
my God, he's
the King of Strong Style, Mr. Nakamura.
There was the ROH champion. Wow, how come I can't remember his name?
Who? Adam Cole?
No.
No.
The other guy.
Bennett?
Nope. He was there. He was there like a few weeks ago for NXT.
Oh, Tommaso Ciampa.
No, not him.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know why I'm like having a brain fart right now with this.
Well, we know it's not the Young Bucks. They re-signed with Ring of Honor exclusively, so they'll be going. They have a deal with them in New Japan, so they're pretty much locked up.
Yeah.
Steve Corino had neck surgery, so he's gonna be out for a while. But Ring of Honor is gonna be doing. They're doing some big things right now, you know.
Well, yeah, they're next year they're going to be doing some live shows over in Japan too, presented with New Japan Pro Wrestling. So yeah,
under their banner.
Yeah,
that's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah,
that's going to be very cool. And this stuff normally you'd get on DVD or videotape back in the day, like when ECW, when they toured Japan, they didn't air that; they just did it for DVD.
Yeah, Aries. That's
Austin Aries. You're right. Thank you. He's been in the other Fed for a while, so. That's why you forgot.
I'm like having all like the different. I think he was like Austin Starr and TNA. Didn't he have some other names too, or was it just those two?
That doesn't matter.
Yeah,
he was there, and we forgot. So thank you for reminding me.
Yeah,
we should write some of that stuff down. But we don't have a lot of news, and I don't care because I hate wrestling right now.
Yeah. So Nakamura is getting scouted.
Here's my question to you.
Yeah.
He's not a spring chicken.
No, he's in his late 30s.
Right. Do you? Same boat, I guess, as Samoa Joe. Does that make sense?
Well, some of the reports are saying that, you know, he may just be somebody who, let me rephrase myself. If I remember correctly from what I've read, there are certain people that are being scouted for NXT, specifically just for NXT. They're not looking to bring them up to the main roster. And if so, it's probably going to be on a very limited basis because, you know, due to their age, like specifically Samoa Joe. Though, talk around town is Nakamura is somebody that they're looking to bring up to the main roster. So how that's going to work, I don't know. For instance, guys like Daniel Bryan. He wasn't in WWE for too long, and the guy's already, you know.
Right.
Been on the shelf for quite some time and constantly on the shelf.
Right.
And just in general, I don't know if it's just the style of wrestling these days or the demand that's being put on these guys, but they're just getting injured more consistently left and right.
Is it because they're more athletic?
I think so. Like, I'm just noticing for myself, you know, just going to the underground strength gym as often as I do and, you know, working out at home, there's just going to be points where your body's just sore and you got to give it a break. And you can't, you know, you can't drive a car 100 miles an hour all the time. There's going to be a point where you got to bring it down to 60, and there's going to be a point where you got to bring it down to 20, and there's going to be even a point where you got to bring it down to zero so you could park the damn thing, you know?
Well, that's my thing with New Japan, because they don't run 300 days a year like the E does.
No.
Right? So, like, guys like Nakamura has had pretty much a lot of the top guys have had. I mean, come on, man.
But they probably have more wear and tear on their bodies just from the style of wrestling that they do over there.
Fucking Tenru was 106 and he retired. But because Tenru,
he hardly moved during that match.
Right, because he didn't come to the States very often. I mean, he wrestled a lot in the States.
Yeah.
But the regimen is way different from, you know, strong style regimen is way different from, you know, the E and all the feds here in the States.
Yeah.
So,
and WWE nowadays, you know, not just with their, you know, their wellness policy being strict, but they're pretty strict with if anybody has any kind of injury period. If you have a concussion, you're on the shelf. If you, you know, have consistent, you know, injuries, they'll let you go. If you've been watching Breaking Ground, which actually...
I caught the one after Survivor Series, the only one I've seen.
It's a pretty good show. It gives a good detail on where a lot of these NXT guys are in their career, and some of the guys that you just don't see on television, and some of these people that are getting contracts off of Tough Enough, like ZZ. Like, the guy has some serious like troubles doing cardio.
That dude's pretty dumpy. Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty dumpy. He needs to do cardio more consistently, and it just seems like. He seems like a guy who probably won't be sticking around for too long. But overall, there's a, you know, they even show some people on there. I forgot what the guy's name was, Chad something or other, who he's a prime pick, a blue chipper for NXT. But the guy's getting consistently injured. And
I'm sorry, you got to see Dave's face when he said blue chipper. Dave shot me a look. The fucking Ronald McDonald grin. The face is funny. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So yeah, the man has a lot of potential, but he's also getting injured all the time. So
right.
You know, if you got, I think one of his issues is that, you know, his shoulders are constantly popping out of place. So one of his concerns is, you know, what if he's doing something simple like a body slam on somebody,
right,
and shoulder pops out of place, and he also injures the guy that he's with.
That's very true. I have before we get into WWE, because I have a couple WWE items I have. I just want to ask you real quick. Get back to Nakamura. You're Nakamura. Do you go at this point?
You know, if I were him, I would just do it just for the sake of having it done.
Because he's done it all.
He's done it all, and he's going to be somebody who they'll bring back to New Japan once he's done with doing that.
Yeah,
he's almost. If anything, it's going to bring more name value to New Japan Pro Wrestling anyway.
You're in the know about this a little more than I am. Is it safe to say that he's almost as popular as Jushin Thunder Liger is?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's their guy. He's their Hulk Hogan. He's their John Cena. Right?
Yeah, well, I would say Tanahashi's more in that role. But,
yeah? I mean, currently. But, I mean, in the grand scheme of things.
You know, I would say the best way I could...
Hulk Hogan?
I would say he's like the Ric Flair.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair.
Because he is a heel.
I love him.
He is a heel. He is flamboyant.
He's so charismatic, man.
And, the
whole King of Strong style, the whole Freddie Mercury gimmick, it's amazing. He's hands down one of my favorite wrestlers of all time.
Yeah.
I've never seen a bad match out of him. Yeah. Ever. Ever.
Yeah.
Even when the match wasn't as great as some of the other matches were.
Yeah.
All right. Couple of WWE notes. Did you see I haven't spoken to you since Survivor Series. Did you see it?
Yeah, I watched it.
And?
I don't remember much of it. So needless to say, it wasn't that great.
Let me just touch on the end real quick. I like the end.
Yeah.
I think they rushed it. I think they rushed the ending of the match to get to Sheamus. Did you notice that?
Yeah, because that match in particular, it was pretty short. It wasn't anything. Best way I can put it was like there was no flow to the match. Like it just seemed like it started and then it ended.
Right.
So there wasn't really any middle. You know, there wasn't any kind of best way I could word it. There was no story. You know, there was nothing to get caught up in. It just, you know, the guys already had their matches previously, and for two guys that were in the Shield. you would think that there would be, you know, a bit more meat on the bone, but there wasn't.
I thought the match was good.
Yeah.
I thought it was solid. I just thought that they rushed the ending.
Yeah, it was okay. It wasn't
to get to Sheamus.
Yeah.
Which pissed me off. Not because Sheamus won the belt.
Yeah.
But you saw the confetti. Like, the match ended, like, abruptly, almost. Yeah. Like, the ending didn't feel fresh to me, A. B, they kept Charles Robinson at ringside. So you knew somebody was coming out when the confetti was falling.
Yeah.
All the camera was phased on was Roman Reigns and Little Nate in the corner. And then, like, you knew it. Like, everybody in the room was like, you know, we all saw it, you know? We all saw it. We saw it coming a mile away. And I was like, you know, but I didn't get a chance to talk to you since then because you haven't been on. But I feel like it was rushed, and I don't mind Sheamus right now as the champion transitionally. I think they'll give it to Roman Reigns eventually.
They'll pass it around another 15 more times. And
it doesn't matter. But, I mean, more importantly, on the WWE Network, the Turnbuckle Throwbacks just cashed in on, like, 6 months to a year's worth of, like, goodness, I feel like.
Yeah.
We can touch on different promotions now because Smoky Mountain, Global Wrestling Federation.
Which is more they're showing more of the USWA stuff. They're not showing, like, the real global stuff just yet. Like,
It was a runoff of WCCW. That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
Like I was telling our buddy Felonious yesterday on Facebook. And, of course, Mid-South.
Yeah.
And they added a bunch of Jim Crockett promotion Saturday night shows.
Over 2.5 years worth.
That's what I did all.
And I've seen most of 86 already.
Watched most of 86 Thanksgiving weekend, where it was on my phone, on Mikey's tablet, in front of my TV, whatever chance I can get on the way to work, on the way home, I didn't give a shit. I don't give a fuck if it's edited. Dave and I just wanted some stuff to lead up to the big pay-per-views, and we haven't had that.
Yeah.
I mean, we could have went. There's a couple of guys that sell, like, the box sets for, like, $200. And, of course, if I had the money, I would buy all that shit, but I don't.
Yeah, there's even – I know there's one dude on eBay who's selling every single episode of Mid-South on DVD, and it's, like, over $1,000.
Yeah, it's – I mean
– as much as I would love to watch all those episodes with the original music and everything like that, like
– it's not worth it.
Yeah.
We're not,
and I think it's actually the guy that – the person that's selling it, I believe, is the same person that WWE bought the rights from. So it's actually source material.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and I know, and even, like, Feinstein selling, like, every ECW DVD for, like $1,700, whatever it is. Like, you know, whatever. It's not, you know, when you have bills and a mortgage.
When you're living life.
When you're living life, you can't stop wrestling. However.
On the edge of a lightning bolt.
That's right, baby. I will take one. We'll take one for the team and just do the footage that we have on the network. And I guarantee you it'll be nothing short of brilliant. Dave and I always come correct. I'm not just tooting my own fucking horn, but as double A on Anderson would say, toot toot.
Yeah.
We are the best, and I think we are gonna bring you guys the best of all that stuff when we pick certain feuds. We're already talking about it already. It's been we're giddy. Dave hasn't posted this much on social media since his inception to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast.
I think I have posted more stuff in the past.
You have posted more stuff on the main page, on the main page that we have, the group page. You've been on fire, and everybody noticed it.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, is Dave all right? What's going on? Did Dave lose his job? I'm like, no. Dave's just on vacation. He's on staycation.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, we're going to come correct like we always do. We're going to bring you some great stuff. I already have in my head at least 4 or 5 events I want to do. Double A from the Rant wants us to do Super Clash. Did we do Super Clash yet?
I think we did one of them.
We didn't do 3, right? With Lawler and Von Erich?
No, we didn't.
So we could do that now because we have the build up to it. So there's a bunch of stuff.
People, it doesn't have – well –
does it have the?
No, it doesn't have the build up for that. No,
I thought he
said there's a lot of the promotions that are on there, like Smoky Mountain. What else? GWF. What's the other one? Stampede, Mid-South. They only have maybe like 10 episodes max.
Stampede, I'm not too familiar with. Like, I mean, I know who the main play is well, but I just didn't follow.
Yeah, it's a Hart family.
Yeah, what? Well, obviously, but I didn't follow any of the storylines. You know.
Well, it's Canada, and we didn't even have that period.
No, but Either way, we're gonna bring you some good quality programming.
Yes.
Because that's what we do here at the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. We're quality, Dave. We're fucking quality.
Top shelf.
Top shelf. That's right. Yeah. We're like the 100-year-old scotch that you paid $25 a shot for in the dive bar, you know?
Yes.
That's how we get down. That's how we get down.
It's time to celebrate.
That's right. It's a celebration, bitches. Enjoy yourself.
And respect yourself.
And respect yourself and everybody else, exactly.
Yes.
Which is the main theme of tonight's show.
What would Bruce Willis do?
Bruce Willis would probably shoot you barefoot, like in Die Hard. He'd probably come out of his bed. He'd probably, without his slippers, with some kind of automatic machine gun, and shoot you for not respecting him.
And then hang out under the boardwalk.
We'll call Winslow, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it is what it is. Any other news and notes, items?
Yeah, real quick. Tomoaki Honma from New Japan Pro Wrestling got into a little scandal, but from what I'm hearing, they're not making like a big deal out of it. Usually when dudes have any sort of personal stuff come out on them, it's equals the equivalent of death in Japan, because if any sort of personal information that is not very that doesn't paint you in a fond picture, you can potentially lose your job and have your life completely ruined. And Homa specifically, in the past, I believe when he was originally with New Japan Pro Wrestling, had some run-ins with the Yakuza, who were helping him sell tickets for shows.
Wait, the Yakuza is still a thing?
Yeah, it's always been a thing. It's always going to be a thing.
Well, for our younger listeners, if you don't know what the Yakuza is, it's the Japanese mafia.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
Yeah. So apparently he was connected with them selling pro wrestling tickets for New Japan or something in the past. And information about that leaked out, and he got fired from New Japan. And then he did his deathmatch circuits, and you know, obviously he's back, and over the past couple of years he's been building up a reputation of being the ultimate underdog in New Japan Pro Wrestling, more or less losing every match that he's been in, with the exception of like tag matches, but normally he doesn't get the pinfall victory. And just this past G1 Climax tournament, he got his first pinfall victory in over a year. I think it was like over like a year and a half or something like that. But anyway, his live-in girlfriend, Kyoko Ichiki, who's also a former Joshi wrestler with IWA and Big Japan Pro Wrestling, has called him out in the press for physically attacking her and abusing her over the last, I believe, like 4 years. And I believe they've been actually living together for the last 18 years. So both parties are going back and forth, you know, saying that they've been abusing each other. Physically, mentally, emotionally, you know, all that and more. And basically the rundown, let me see if I can read something for you. I say, culturally, while the publicity is not good, this has not resulted in the type of reaction something like this would get if it was a similar level star in the U.S. It's notable because the press covers Japanese pro wrestling far more than in the U.S., although the gap isn't nearly as wide today as it was for the past 60 years. While this incident did get some mainstream publicity, many key people in the Japanese pro wrestling industry were unaware of it even after it had been covered in Japan and discussed in the U.S. Homa is still currently working in New Japan for their World Tag League tournament.
Yep.
However, the story did start to garner more interest in Japan when Homa responded by threatening a lawsuit and claiming all of the incidents described previously were him acting in self-defense. Ichiki claimed in a women's magazine in Japan that about a month ago, she and Homa were out to dinner at a Tokyo restaurant and bumped into a woman who said she had dated Homa 4 years ago. Ichiki was understandably upset. She was also claimed she's suffering from clinical depression, as there's also a television angle on Japanese television where Homa has the hots for a 41-year-old former Japanese pop singer who had several top 10 singles and albums in the past, and her career has declined due to drug rumors that still surface from time to time. The storyline, Homa's a horn dog for this chick, and he's constantly asking her out. Though the public was never aware that Homa had been living with his girlfriend for Ichiki for 18 years and practically married to her. And as he was pushed in the public as being single, while we're told this is just a television storyline arranged for publicity for both of them, Ichiki claimed that she's going through depression because of the behavior on television.
Nice.
So you're having all this crazy stuff going on. From what I hear, he's doing pretty well in the Tag League, World Tag League tournament for New Japan. So we'll see how this turns out for our underdog hero with the Gokeshi headbutt.
So how does New Japan – I'm not familiar with their, like their policy and procedure and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
From what you know, what do they do? Do they suspend guys, not in storyline? They take pay away from them? They knock them down in stature?
Stuff like this happens?
Yeah.
Usually they get suspended. There's that one wrestler, Tai Chi, who he was a wrestler in the junior division. Now he's the GHC junior heavyweight champion because New Japan also owns I don't think they completely own pro wrestling.
No, role, they own a working agreement.
Yeah, they have like a working agreement where they have like some sort of investments in them that they're making. And Tai Chi is, with them and with Suzuki Goon over there. But there was information either this year or late last year that he cheated on his wife. So because of that, because that information was made public and it makes the company look bad.
Yeah.
He got suspended for, 6 months or something like that. So if any sort of, bad press comes onto the company because, somebody's out, acting like an idiot, they have more severe repercussions than somebody like here, For instance, Seth Rollins with a dick pic.
Yeah.
What happened with that?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Right.
That's pretty big.
Right, exactly.
A dick pic.
I know.
Especially for dudes. Dudes can't be naked on the internet,
No, it's not cool.
Chicks, I know Alicia Fox mentioned on one of those top 10 shows or something like that. And, if there's like a nip slip or something like that on television, you get fined pretty heavily for something like that.
Right, you got to keep your costume tight.
Yeah, since Seth Rollins is like the main guy, I'm sure the guy probably got like fined or something like that, but they're not taking him off television.
And they fired his girlfriend to boot because she's a fucking racist.
Yeah, she handled the Nazi
paraphernalia.
Yeah, war memorabilia. Yeah. It only works if you're Lemmy from Motorhead.
That band's dropping off like flies. They just lost their drummer, guitar player.
The Filthy Phil, that guy hasn't drummed with them for decades. So.
Yeah, I guess, but I mean they're
Mickey D's been their drummer for
forever, and Lemmy's not in good shape.
Nah, he had some heart problems or kidney problems.
He had a pacemaker put in or something like that.
Yeah,
he's in bad shape.
He's still touring though. They have a new album.
They just canceled the tour.
They canceled it.
They canceled the recent tour. Yeah,
really.
Yeah, are you an Anthrax fan at all?
Yeah, but I'm not that big on Anthrax.
So you wouldn't go see them with Lamb of God in January?
No, I wouldn't do that.
Okay. We're leaving you out of the plans then. All right. Speaking of GHC real quick, the tag champions, Killer Elite Squad, are defending the titles against, in a couple of weeks, I think it's going to be against Cabana and Chris Hero. That should be a fun match.
Yeah.
Because Cabana's over in GHC. He's big in NOAH.
Yeah.
He tours there like at least twice a year, so.
Yeah, he's been there more consistently, especially since his buddy Chris Hero is over there, too.
That's his boy, yeah.
So
I like Chris Hero, man.
I hear NOAH isn't all that great lately, but I hear mainly because Suzuki-Goon is squashing everybody.
They're like the NWO of Japan. Yeah. Yeah, I
know. So, and another thing about Japanese pro wrestling, I guess very unlike wrestling fans over here. I could be a fan of WWE, but I can also be a WCW fan and watch both shows and have I might be more of a WCW guy, but it's not going to affect me watching WWE.
Right.
But I guess Japanese pro wrestling fans over the legit Japanese fans are more like akin to sports fans over here. Like this is our promotion. We're not going to go
it's
and
like
watch
Yankee
New
fans
Japan's.
Don't root for the Red Sox.
Exactly.
Met fans don't root for the Phillies. I get it. It's so, you know, I can respect that.
Yeah. So
I can respect that.
Having guys like Suzuki Yun, who are predominantly New Japan guys, in NOAH, it's like, why are they here? And they're getting major heat, but at the same time, they're squashing everybody in their place. They've been there for quite some time. I think it's been over 6 months now. These guys have held the titles for since they got them. I don't know if there's been any title changes, but needless to say, you know, I'm sure Pro Wrestling NOAH fans are up in arms about all this stuff going on. I'm sure there's still great matches going on, but I don't really hear anybody talking about them.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens, and I'm sure it'll get heated up now with the end of the year.
Yeah.
Things are wrapping up, and Wrestle Kingdom around the corner now.
Yeah.
Almost about a month away. So
January 4th, Mel Gibson's birthday. The day after my birthday.
So, yeah, we're having another Mega Powers birthday party, hopefully.
Yes.
We call it, yeah, dude, it's a month from today.
Yeah.
So we're excited. We're excited about pay-per-view.
I can't wait.
Can't wait. Are you ready? For your throwback, you want to take a break or you want to do?
Let's take a break.
All right.
Been drinking all this water.
All this water, he says. All right, so we're going to play a couple of spots because we can't play other spots anymore. So let's do this, and that. All right. We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. We're live on rantemradio.com, turnbucklethrowbacks.com as well, on your Roku, your PlayStation, your Xbox. Tune in. All the other happy horse shit. And we'll be right back with a kick-ass throwback for you.
Indeed.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
In the ring, out of the ring, out of control!
WWF Royal Rumble on Super Radio, 16 Meg Mayhem!
This guy's rocking!
It's perfect.
With more WWF superstars than ever before!
Unbelievable six men in the ring at once!
No holds barred, anything goes action!
It's a slugfest!
That's perfect.
Each wrestler's specialty move!
Complete mayhem!
The Tombstone Pile!
It's out of control!
The Banzai Drop!
Total chaos!
The perfect plex.
Oh, did you see that?
WWF Royal Rumble on Super NES!
Get it now!
Perfect.
Hey, when you're done listening to this podcast, go head on over to soundcloud.com/shellshock-network. Listen to shows such as DJ Sportscast, Nerd Otaku, ShellPod Extra, ShellPod Theater, and the mothership, ShellPod. We're a wrestling podcast, sports podcast, pop culture podcast. Whatever you want out of podcasts, head on over to soundcloud.com/shellshock-network. soundcloud.com/shellpod-network. Once again, that is soundcloud.com/shellpod-network.
Yes, wrestling-news.com. That's right, wrestling-news.com. Check out the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show every Monday live at 11:15, right after Monday Night Raw. Join Don Tony and my pal Kevin Castle as they just do it like they've been doing it for almost a decade. So check them out, wrestling-news.com. Doing it big. Doing it New York style, wrestling-news.com.
The following announcement has been paid for by the Ike World Order.
Forget about that. You just brought up
Gary Hart will whip his ass.
Tony C just brought up Ike Turner. How awesome was Lawrence Fishburne in that movie?
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
I'm sorry to get off topic, but he was amazing.
I played that role. Nah. I got San Antonio. Nah. I can have you.
Ike said he only hit her once.
He beat her with a shoe.
Nah, I only hit her one time.
He said he only smacked her once.
He smacked her once, but he hit her with everything else.
I hit him with everything but the kitchen sink now, dog, but I'm saying.
Do you see that? You see that look in his eye?
Daddy is more of a man than Rage.
Ooh, wait a minute now.
Oh, yes, works.
Wait a second. This is the co-host of the Wrestling Colon Show. You call yes, works.
That was all so right. Disrespectful.
Nah,
I can't have you.
That's
you,
why your
you
girl's, about,
like, you
that's why your girl's about to get eliminated from the Amazing Race.
You see that? I've never questioned your manhood, Rage.
Bullshit, you didn't, Surfer.
Tony.
You never ever question your manhood.
Trying to help out.
Yo, you did it. Yo, you always do it. How?
The preceding announcement has been paid for by the Ike World Order. The Wrestling Call-In Show. Every Saturday evening on RantEMRadio.com.
Hey, this is Innovative Selfie, Sonny Ono, on Turnbuckle Throwbacks, and it's the best information on professional wrestling.
Propane for you. Little make war, not love.
Spelled P-R-O-P-A-I-N.
Gary Meskill was part of a very famous, legendary New York hardcore band, the Crumbsuckers.
Crumbsuckers.
I don't know if you ever heard of them.
No.
Never heard of the Crumbsuckers?
I'm not a big hardcore guy.
Well, they're a punk. They're like, they were like one of the first punk hardcore crossover guys. Like, we're not Agnostic right. Front and all those guys. All right. So he formed Propane in like late 80s, early 90s. They put out one album, which was great. The second album is great, but it's not selling. Guy goes to Europe, and he's like a god there. He's like the David Hasselhoff of hardcore in Europe.
I bet.
He has the number one record like in Germany, Switzerland, fucking France, Italy.
It's like once you get outside of this country, people appreciate you so much more.
Yeah, man.
Like there's a lot of stuff that I love, obviously, that's from here, and then once it gets overseas, it blows up.
Yeah,
and a lot of bands that like nobody knows dick about here can go over to Japan or some other country like Germany or Sweden or whatever, and have like a legit tour.
They even did a song with Ice-T. They did a bunch of stuff. They're good, Propane. I got to see them again back in like 08, 09. Yeah. They toured with my buddy Sal's band, Sworn Enemy. Shout out to them, by the way. They're doing big things right now. Sal and Sworn Enemy. So if you're, it's like metal, a little hardcore, like metalish though. It's like it's pretty good though. It's good sound. Not because Sal's my boy, but I'm a fan.
No, not because he's your boy.
No, I've known Sal since high school, and when he got the band, I played with his other band, Corruption.
Uh-huh.
So I know the guys pretty well. Him and one drum, the one guitarist he had, I think he's not there anymore. The guy Larry, but. But yeah, they're good stuff. Mm. So, anyway, we're back. Turnbuckle Throwbacks live, rantemradio.com. Rant Entertainment Media. Go search that on your iTunes. We're on Google Play now. We're on TuneIn with the Rant guys and Turnbuckle Throwbacks. If you search Turnbuckle Throwbacks on on TuneIn. I can't even talk today. On TuneIn, you'll get at least 20 to 40 of our back episodes, our back catalog from the last year and a half. Whatever.
Too sweet.
It is too sweet. All right. David, are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Right. And now, here is your throwback of the week, sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio.
Gotta fix that, but either way. Love that music. Did you get used to it yet or no?
I'm starting to.
Thanks, pal.
I was watching some one of the episodes of GWF, which was actually a USWA episode. And man, it was it's the very first one, like whatever the earliest episode that they have on there is. And it's from the Dallas Sportatorium.
That's right.
And whoever, whatever belt that they're using, whatever they're calling it, the champion is Kerry Von Erich, and his brother Kevin is wrestling. And, man, it's just one of the saddest things that I've seen, that episode. Jerry Lawler is there.
Jerry Lawler was their champion like 27 times.
Yeah, for USWA, yeah.
Legit 27 times.
Probably still is.
If you go online and count his title reigns, I believe it's 27. So he's won as many championships as the New York Yankees.
You know, I'd like to see John Cena try to beat that record.
Ain't nobody beating that record. Jerry Lawler's had a birthday recently. A lot of birthdays yesterday, too.
Yeah.
But I posted, before we get into my throwback, I posted a little in a memory of yesterday on the page of all the wrestlers that died this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think I even missed a few. A lot of wrestlers died this year.
Yeah.
You know, more importantly, our buddy Timmy Arson passed away, who was a big fan of Turnbuckle Throwbacks. You know him as the ECW Zombie.
Yeah.
Of course, Buddy Landell passed away. Piper, of course. Of course, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes.
Vern Gagne. Nick Bockwinkel.
Cora Combs, very famous women's wrestler before Moolah. Like, a lot of famous. El Pedro Aguayo Jr., if you're a Lucha fan.
He was in the Lucha Mexico movie.
And died in a ring from, like, neck trauma. Remember that?
Yeah.
Fucking sad this year for deaths, man. So, we did a little in memory of. So, hopefully the next 3 weeks nobody dies on me. I'll have to post another one.
Yeah, what was it? During the summer, we had, like, all these episodes planned. And then it was just, like, tribute show after tribute show.
In the month of June, we had, like, four deaths.
Yeah.
If you look at the dates of when they died, I posted on the page yesterday.
Yeah.
Sad. It's just sad.
Domino effect.
Terrible. As they say around the way, they're dropping like flies, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Dropping like flies. All right. David and I have a kick-ass throwback for you this week. Kicking it back to November 26th, 1995 at the Scope.
The Norfolk Scope, right by the Virginia waterfront.
That's right. The first couple of these pay-per-views were actually from the Scope, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
This was WCW's answer to the Royal Rumble, I guess.
Yeah.
World War III.
So what did they do to try to make, to outdo the Rumble? Put more guys in the ring.
Put more guys in it. Yeah. Let's not add 40 guys. Let's add 60 guys.
Yeah. Even when WWE did 40 guys, they brought it back down to 30.
And rightfully so.
Yes.
Rightfully so.
Because that Rumble was shitty, too.
That's right. Weren't you here for that, the 40-man, the first year you did the show?
I think so.
Yeah. That's when Batista won or something like that? Somebody, I forget who won it. Anyway,
I don't care.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. The food was more important.
Yeah. That was probably more
fun. And it'll be more important this year when we have our next Rumble party.
Yeah.
All right. November 26, 1995, from the Scope, by the waterfront, in beautiful Norfolk, Virginia. 12,000 in attendance, allegedly. Match was stacked. Everybody who was anybody in WCW was involved in it. They left.
This is the first of many appearances by Pistol Pez Watley in the World War III match.
I'm glad you brought that up. And you know what's funny too is that the I tried watching the build up.
Yeah.
And the build up sucked. Like the last two Nitros before this were fucking awful. Like, there was no build-up to World War III. They were more focused on Hogan, Savage, and Sting. And, like, you know.
Even before the NWO, they were just focused on that storyline.
Right. And you would think, like, you know, with the Giant and the Dungeon of Doom and, like, Lex Luger. Like, they did have some promos, but, like, there was no run-ins. There was no, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it just sucked. So, but.
Well, speaking for myself, when this was going down, I was more the concept of World War III sold itself to me just from the start.
Yeah, of course.
Plus, since the title was on the line, you know, made it even more important. So that alone, back in 1995, was good enough for me.
I mean, all I know is that I tried to get into the spirit of the pay per view, you know. I really tried.
The ghost of World War III's past and World War III future.
So, it is what it is. But this is a stack card.
Yeah.
And it's cool because at least guys that you would never have thought to do double duty tonight. And they had to because you have 60 fucking wrestlers
participating in this thing. Well, everybody that had a match was going to be back in World War III later on that night.
Right.
And you had some like really random guys. You had so even some jobbers. Mike Winter was in there, one of my favorites. The Barrio Brothers were there. Some WCW Saturday Night staples.
Yeah.
Who else? The Super Assassins, which were actually Barbarian Warlord, were in there.
Yep.
Under masks. And it was just literally the entire roster. The Yeti, wearing his new ninja gimmick, was in there.
The Yeti.
Yeah.
Ron Studd. All right. Let's do the opening, the curtain jerk, as we call it in here in the business. The WCW TV title match, Johnny B. Badd defending against the chauvinistic Diamond Dallas Page.
And we're treated to this as the opening match yet again.
Yet again.
Because what was it? It was for Fall Brawl, right?
Yep.
Fall Brawl 95.
Yep. 1 second. All right, so Johnny B. Badd against Mark Mero. I'm sorry, Johnny B.
Oh, actually, wait a second. Wait,
Johnny B. Badd against DDP, I'm sorry.
I gotta stop you before we get into this.
Go ahead.
And I completely forgot about it. This is the night where Hulk Hogan drops the Darkness Hulk, the Darkness Hogan gimmick. He sheds off the black bandana, the black shirt, the black tights, throws it into the garbage can and lights it on fire.
He did that on Nitro. No, he did that.
No, he did it at the beginning of the pay-per-view.
Right, I'm sorry. No, he burnt the dirt sheet. I call this a rag sheet, brother.
It's a dinosaur compared to the internet.
That's right.
Speaking from the biggest dinosaur of them all.
Right, so in the scheme of things, he burns the dirt sheet, and then he burns the bandana.
And actually, I thought this was pretty cool because this was a... this was the throwback to, you know, not too long ago when all of them were in WWF. They had the interview stand right by the entranceway facing the crowd so you can actually see how many people are there. And you have Mean Gene interviewing Hulk Hogan, Sting.
Sting.
Wait a minute. Can't do that without me playing it. Sting. Hold on a minute, man. My fucking thing was low.
Sting.
There you go. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Loud and proud. And Macho Man wearing his WWF gear from his last title reign, which I thought was pretty cool. Because when you're a big wrestling fan, you know where those fucking clothes are and when they wore it and you know what period of time. And this dude was bringing back his 92 title reign, you know, tights and cowboy hat and all that. So that was pretty cool. So I thought this was a great way to kick off WCW World War III with Hulk Hogan bringing it back to the red and yellow, mainly because let's face it, the whole as entertaining as Darkness Hogan was, especially with the Phantom of the Opera mask and the sword for a little bit.
It's like a bad Disney production.
Yeah, like the personality that Hogan portrays was still with the Darkness Hogan gimmick, so it wasn't really all that dark. It was just this. Just him, playing dress up, for Halloween, and it was just ridiculous. So I couldn't take it completely serious. And for all the great stuff that's happening in WCW, as we talked about, because we covered 1995 quite extensively this year,
because of the network brought us
everything's
back.
On there, And so we don't have to dig through old VHS tapes or YouTube clips and shit like that. So.
Yeah, of course.
So with a lot of the great talent that they're bringing in from New Japan and just really revamping, WCW for this time, the Hulk Hogan, Dungeon of Doom stuff didn't really, fit as well. Like, it still fit because you had some great stuff that was going on with that storyline, especially with Lex Luger coming in from Nitro, calling out Hogan wanting a title shot to the paranoia going on. Like, what side is Lex Luger on? Is he part of the Dungeon of Doom? Is he Sting's friend? Who's he with? What's the deal? And, at the same time, he's feuding with Macho Man because Macho Man absolutely does not trust him. Sting trusts him. Hulk Hogan, is caught in the middle. And he has the Dungeon of Doom to deal with. So there's a little backstory of what's going on with that, since we haven't talked about 95 for a few weeks, 2 weeks maybe.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're treated to this opening contest yet again of Johnny B. Badd, the television champion, defending against Diamond Dallas Page with the stipulation that if Johnny B. Badd wins, not only does he retain the television title,
but he gets Miss Kimberly.
Yeah.
Hubba, hubba. She was a piece, though. She's good looking.
She still is.
I haven't seen her recently.
I haven't seen photos of her recently.
I'm sure she's a looker, though.
She was in 40-Year-Old Virgin, and she was hot.
That's been a while now, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure she's
if she still looks like that, she's still doing
she's
good.
She's still a dime piece, then.
Yeah.
All right, so...
not a diamond in the rough.
Not a diamond in the rough. Not a diamond in your pocket, but a dime piece.
Yeah.
Diamonds don't work much these days, but back in the day, a dime piece was a dime piece.
Yeah.
All right, so... This was an okay match. It's just a regular. It was the same match they had the last time, except the a little more spots in this match, I thought.
Yeah, and Johnny B. Badd showing off his millionth different finisher this time with the Badd move.
The Badd move, which is a slingshot splash. But DDP.
No, it was the
That's the Badd move.
Yeah, he slingshots. He how can I word it? Like it's.
I got it. It's just like splash. That's all I got.
It's like a two part finishing move, which doesn't make any sense. Because initially he had the Tutti Frutti, then he had the
hello,
which he uses in this match. He had the sunset flip over the top rope,
right?
And now he has the Badd mood, which was he does kind of like a plancha onto his opponent on the outside of the ring. So once that guy's knocked out on the floor, he picks him up and then throws him back inside of the ring and then slingshots himself to do like a leg drop or a splash or something like that. I think he changes it up. I'm pretty sure it's the leg drop, but slingshots himself, hits the leg drop, and then pins his opponent. And I don't know if you want to go over the ins and outs of this match.
I have some stuff here. Like he goes for that slingshot splash.
Yeah.
DDP gets the knees up. DDP taunts him, gets the huge booze, obviously. DDP hits a gut-wrench gutbuster for the two count. And then tries another one, but Mero slides. I'm sorry, I shouldn't call him Mero. Let's call him Johnny B. Badd. Keep thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny B. Badd slides behind, so DDP elbows, gives him an elbow. DDP tries a tombstone, but Johnny B. Badd boots out of it. Counters with his own tombstone, gets two count again. Then Johnny B. Badd dumps DDP with a right, and Mero follows.
The Tutti Frutti.
The Tutti Frutti, right. I'm sorry, Dave.
Or is that the kiss that don't miss? I think they're both.
I think it was the left. So the left was Tutti Frutti.
I think initially it was called the kiss that don't miss, and then he changed it to the Tutti Frutti.
So what was the right then?
I don't think he used the right. I think he mainly was a lefty.
Well, he hit him with a right in this one, in this particular match, in this particular time in the match. And then he follows.
I guess we'll call that the Tutti Frutti.
We'll call it Tutti Frutti. And then he follows with a slingshot flip senton, which actually gave Stone Cold his stitches a couple of years later in the King of the Ring tournament. Then he hits a springboard guillotine leg drop.
Yeah.
And then gets the
one piece
two,
of the
three. And at 12:33, your winner and still world TV champion.
And now with a beautiful woman by his side. Who he gave the choice. He gave her a choice. If you want to be my manager.
The Abe Lincoln of WCW.
Yes.
Freeing the women.
You know, Abe Lincoln did all this great work for the black people. Now the black people are giving back.
Hey-o!
They're not all trying to take our white women. There's good souls out there like Johnny B. Badd who are like, listen, white woman, if you want to be with me, it's your choice. You can respect yourself and make your own choice.
Ring the bell, fucking lunatic.
What? I'm just saying how it is.
Your next match is a taped fist match. Big Bubba Rogers versus Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Oh, God.
Bubba is dressed like the boss man.
He's dressed like Big Bubba.
Well, yeah, he's dressed like an unemployed Arunachal Shyster.
Yeah. Duggan. Oh, wait a second. Wait one moment.
Okay.
We have a Mean Gene spot talking about
the Mean Gene spot.
900 number.
1-800-999-900 and tell me what.
He's like, How did he word it? Because he brought it up in such a way where it was just kind of like, wow, this is like old news, and why are you bringing it back up? He's like, if you think you haven't heard, if you think you haven't heard the end of the WWF steroid scandal, there's still more news. It just sounded like he's just like fishing with old stuff, you know. I didn't know there
to make.
I'm sure there was. I'm sure there was still stuff going on in 1995. Because let's face it, 95 was like the year that they were. A lot of people thought WWF was going to go under.
It's the new generation.
Yeah, the new generation. Oh God, we have Bret Hart as our champion. We're going to go out of business.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
And they should have gone out of business for having him as world champion. So, but anyway, that's just my opinion.
Thank you, Dave. I forgot about that spot. Duggan runs up from behind, hits Bossman during his entrance, and waffles him with a tape fist. Has a 2x4 around his neck. Tosses Bossman around ringside as Bobby the Brain Heenan says his grandmother was a tape fist champion, has three less teeth than Duggan.
Yeah, there was actually a video package on WCW Saturday Night about Jim Duggan finding his roots as a tape fist fighter.
Yeah.
Because his grandmother was a tape fist champion in Ireland or something.
With three less teeth.
Yeah. I got to find that video package. That was a good...
Yeah, so do I. The crowd chanting USA, but there's no communists in this match, but they just chant USA because Duggan's in the ring.
Well, listen, I remember for some of those old Coliseum videos, like it was the World Tour videos. Like I think it was either like World Tour 90 or 91 or something like that. They have a Duggan match in France. And the crowd is chanting USA. This man could be in
Cambodia and
they'll chant USA. In Sweden and they'll chant USA. He could be anywhere and the fans will chant USA. It doesn't matter.
It's awesome.
So I'm not going to fault the fans on this one.
I'm not faulting the fans. Just making a note of it. That's all. That's all. I like to make notes of these things sometimes. Duggan comes in with more rights and threatens to blast Bossman with a 2x4. The ref calls him off.
Yeah.
And Bossman begs off as Brain speculates that there could be – where's my notes? Here's my notes. There could be rocks or sand in that tape to make the punches more effective. Tony Schiavone says he doesn't see that as a problem with the strategy, shockingly. Because it's a tape fist match. Anything goes.
Yeah.
You know.
Just punch him in the face. That's what you got
to
do.
No matter what you load the glove with or the tape with.
Yeah.
The ref convinces him not to use the board. Bubba then comes back with a shot, but eats a few clotheslines from Duggan, and then eats the floor. Ho! Duggan sends him into the apron, and they brawl over a different ring. Two do a different ring, and the ref follows. Duggan botches him, sending him into the ring post. Duggan tries an elbow drop, but Bossman slowly side. This was like the slowest sidestep ever. He sidesteps. And then lets him fall into the guardrail. Bossman follows that with a couple of uppercuts. Let's see. I'm going to fast forward this because this is getting really stupid. Bossman chokes him with his foot. Blah, 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 blah.
Punches him in the face.
Right. They start slugging
it
out.
Let's get that to VK Wall Street coming down to the aisle.
All right. Hold on a second. Where's my notes? Because he hits him with... He slugs Bossman and he hits an enziguri on Bossman. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
He hits him with an enziguri, yeah. They go back and forth. Let's see where
I need to revisit that and post the video.
All right, here we go. Here's my notes. I'm sorry. All right, so now Duggan with the body slam wants that 3-point stance that he does.
Yeah,
he gets up with the clothesline, but here comes Michael Wall Street, VK Wall Street, aka Mike Rotundo, aka Mike Rotunda,
aka IRS,
aka IRS, otherwise known as I Really Suck,
aka Captain Mike Rotunda.
Captain Mike Rotunda.
Yeah.
Right, Rotundo. This guy had more fucking names than Beefcake.
More variations of the same name.
Of the same name than Brutus Beefcake did. Here comes Wall Street. Duggan hits him with a 2x4 for the biggest pop in the match, but he manages to slide a chain to the Bossman. Bossman wraps it around his fist and lays out Duggan. The ref starts to count. Bossman covers Duggan, who's out at 10 minutes and 11 seconds.
He can't meet the 10 count, and... loses the match. And fun fact for you, I don't think that there's been any tape fist matches that Hacksaw Jim Duggan won, despite embracing his roots fist wrestler.
His grandmother won more matches than him in tape fist.
Yeah.
His grandmother was
I want to say 100% sure that he never won any of his tape fist matches.
Without even researching that, I'm going to totally agree with you.
Yes. Okay. I know he won more singles matches with the tape fist than he actually won tape fist matches with Tate Fist.
Mean Gene now is cutting a promo with the Nature Boy.
Mean, by God, Gene.
Flair yells, "Don't you understand it? This has been my master plan. I've got Savage, I've got Hogan, I got Sting, I got Luger, all in the same building, under the same roof, at the same time, and they all, just like Dr. J ruled the scope, the Nature Boy will rule WCW one more time. Woo!" And that's it. And that's the infamous, lovely World War III Ric Flair promo in 30 seconds.
Wow.
Thank you. Drive through. We're here till Thursday. Try to veal.
Yes.
Okay. The next match.
The Dave Powers match of the night.
I gotta make a clip of it. The Mega Powers match of the night, sponsored by Ico Pro. You gotta want it. And by Anyway, Japanese world tag. There's no title match. I'm sorry. Japanese women's tag match.
It's actually an interpromotional battle.
Interpromotional battle between Cutie Suzuki and Mayumi Osaki.
From the JWP promotion.
That's right. Versus Bull knocking on Heaven's Door, Nakano. And Akiro
Hokuto.
Hokuto, who, wasn't she married to somebody famous?
She was married to Kensuke Sasaki. That's who's right. Later on this,
yes!
This event.
Yes,
they mentioned it. They actually mentioned it during the commentary.
And I was watching this and I'm like, I know that girl. And then he mentioned it. I'm like, yes. I didn't have to research that. Like, I knew that. I felt good. I'm getting old, though, you know?
And she just, as we spoke with her former manager, Sonny Ono, she recently successfully had breast cancer surgery. She had a breast removed, and she's doing well. And, this is a pre-breast cancer match.
Obviously.
She's definitely doing good during this time.
The truck, the production truck botches the spelling of the name of, they put it as Nagana, not Nakano. No pop for these intros at all because the in-house crowd has no idea who
they are. Yeah, they're not watching All Japan Women's Wrestling. They're not watching JWP.
So they bring out Mike Tenay, the professor, to educate the masses.
Yes.
Tenay says this is a huge story in Japan. The huge storyline in Japan, which I guess is supposed to be compensated for the fact that stateside in Norfolk, it's not a big deal. So that is basically the smaller women versus the bigger women.
Well, it's like any time that you have it doesn't matter what their acumen or their background is. It's just the fans, if they're not on television consistently, the fans aren't gonna like know who the hell they are.
Yeah, you have to understand this is 1995. You're in the
tape trading era.
Tape trading era, but you're also in the CompuServe kind of like infancy of the interwebs.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
People still buying PWIs.
Right, of course.
I'm sure they're still buying them now, but.
Yeah, that's another thing fucking somebody mentioned on their Facebook, on their podcast the other day. I was telling you pre-production. They fucking dog PWI. Like that, and I mentioned it on Facebook. That's a staple.
Yeah.
The books were outdated. They were my fucking books. Okay?
Yeah.
They were my books. They were my stories. I got every single thing out of those books between tape trading, fantasy.
That's how people knew who the guys were, period.
You didn't know Jerry Lawler was USWA champion 27 times if you didn't read the books.
Yeah.
You didn't know that Perro Aguayo wore furry boots unless you read the
Yeah, you didn't. I didn't know who La Parca was until I was reading PWIs, and I didn't, you know, I saw La Parca in Psicosis and Rey Mysterio and those guys in magazines like PWI, The Wrestler, way before they were on WCW television or on ECW.
Yeah, so you know what? Without mentioning names, tough guy. Fuck you and Pro Wrestling Illustrated rules a day, even though, you know, it's outdated,
man.
And even though it doesn't really affect the masses anymore, I still buy it twice a year. So
Bill Apter, George Neapolitano, all those guys that
Brandy Mankiewicz, all the people,
all those guys,
Stu Sachs,
all those guys that contributed to those magazines. Like without them, you know, creating these magazines,
you wouldn't be
general.
A fucking wrestling fan. That you
wouldn't be a wrestling
that
fan.
You say you are, you know.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Let's call a spade a spade.
Listen, are you gonna? I'm sure people talk shit about, you know, people that write for newspapers and stuff like that for major sports. Not that pro wrestling isn't a major sport. It's the sport.
It is the sport.
But at the same time, if it's not for newspapers, it's not for, you know, stuff online, if it isn't for people reporting on any of this stuff, how the fuck are you going to have anybody care about it?
I wasn't going to bring it up because I brought it up on Facebook, but I'm sorry. I was just – it's the one thing that – with all the nonsense going on internally with some of our camps – that was the one thing that fucking pissed me off the most.
Don't make fun of PWI.
That and don't tell me that I'm not a fan because I don't fucking was never in a ring.
Yeah.
Because I've got, you know, 38 years of being a fan and invested, and I'm not tooting my own horn again, but I guess I am. I'm probably the fucking one of the smartest fans that you know and most of our peers know because I love this shit so much and I studied it like a fucking hawk. So
like a hawk.
And I may look like the fucking average dumpy fat fucking wrestling fan that goes to these matches, but I like to consider myself a bit more sophisticated than that. I like to consider myself a little bit smarter than the average bear. I like to consider myself the guy that appreciates the fucking art and the sport that is now sports entertainment. So I feel like I'm going to defend that until I don't want to watch it no more.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. So if anybody has a fucking problem with that, you know where to find me. TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com. Facebook, Twitter, fucking my phone number if you have it, call me, and I'll debate that with you.
So back to Japanese women fighting each other.
So the heel team, which is up by our pal Sonny Ono, has the heel team in this match. They take down Mayuma with the double clothesline and a boot. Nakano with the she's infamous for the hair toss. She's always doing that.
Yeah.
And another and Mayumi is bumping around like crazy. And
she's one of my favorites, and she was a big staple also, I believe, in All Japan with Manami Toyota. So these, like, everyone in this ring are top shelf quality Japanese female wrestlers.
This is like Joshi royalty right now.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
So the fans are ooh and ahhing for that. Akira does a hair toss as well with an axe handle. Akira teases allowing the face tag and just generally acts like a bitch. Bull back in and bites her hand. Tanae on commentary, putting everyone over involved in Japanese wrestling. Breen calls him Ike and asks him about the scandal when Oakland tried to get a tryout at the dojo under a wig and a kimono. Bull Nakano then continues pulling around the hair. Breen guesses that she could bench press 500 pounds by looking at her thighs.
That's one thing about Japanese women wrestlers and just female wrestlers in the past, they had some thick-ass thighs. These women were squatting something
you know,
heavy.
Big Phil's a fan of the thick thigh, so
yeah.
I married a couple. More double teaming from the heels on the top rope. Mayumi tries fighting back, and Bull no-sells it and tosses her back down. Bull taunts Akira, chokes her, and the crowd goes crazy for this, apparently. They start getting into it. They started getting into it at that initial spot with Mayumi anyway.
Yeah.
Mayumi comes back with a flying burrito and a DDT and tags in Cutie illegally, but no one gives a shit.
No.
Cutie with a dropkick for the two count and then to a half crab. Bull Nakano then goes...
The double crab.
Well, yeah. Bull Nakano breaks it up, but Mayumi rolls her into a half crab again as well, and the crowd pops for that. Akira gets to the ropes as Cutie boots around. Cutie with an embarrassingly soft splash on the leg, I thought.
Yeah.
And gets the half crab again for the fifth fucking time. Bull again breaks
gotta
up.
Gotta work the leg.
Gotta work the leg on Anderson style. Akira over and makes the illegal tag as well. Bull sends Cutie off but gets tied up with Mayumi on the apron. Cutie tries a drop kick, but Bull bails and Mayumi eats it. Bull then with a power bomb and goes for a moonsault, but Cutie ducks under it. The crowd is still with them, surprisingly, which I thought was cool because nobody knew who they were.
Yeah.
Mayumi heads up for the double foot stomp. Cutie follows that up with one of her own. Mayumi with another and a Cutie with another.
I love this spot, just the continuous double stomps.
It was well choreographed.
Yeah, yeah.
Cobras only gets a two.
And then only a two after all that.
Yeah, they're jobbing. You know this. Bull blocks a double suplex and hits one of her own. Akira then goes for a splash. The faces go for a double suplex. Bull breaks that up. Let's see what gets to the end. This is a fucking go back and forth. But, oh, yeah, here's a good one. Bull gets Mayumi on her shoulders, and then Akira hits a doomsday device.
Yeah.
And Mayumi takes the bump like a woman. Like a woman.
Like a real woman.
Like a real woman. See, I put that woman right there?
Yeah.
See my notes? Bull covers her, but Cutie breaks it up. At this point, I lost track of who's legal because of tags, and nobody was even caring at this point.
No.
And they're really not detracting from my enjoyment of the match. Akira body slams Mayumi down, and Bull hits a guillotine leg drop off the top rope. Akira forces Cutie, watching her friend get destroyed, for the pin, 1-2-3, at 9:15.
This was an awesome match.
Is it the match of the night, or is Benoit...
For me, it's a coin flip between either this one or the Benoit Sasaki match.
How ironic is the boat match is a strong style, and Dave's like, oh, it's my favorite match of the night.
And you have husband and wife in each match.
That's right.
Yeah.
Your next spot was Jimmy Hart and Mean Gene with Lex Luger.
Mean Gene calling about the hotline?
Yeah, Luger looks to be reading from a fucking cue card off the screen. Well, maybe that was just me.
Maybe.
You have to look at
or both.
Do me a favor. Seriously, when you go home, when you get a chance, when time allows you, play it back.
Uh-huh.
Watch Luger's face.
Well, I need to find that Hacksaw Jim Duggan Enziguri now.
Yeah, find that. But after you watch that match again, watch the Luger spot again, and watch Luger. He looking. It looks like fucking, what's his face? Doug Dillinger's behind the camera guy with cue cards. Where am I? Cue cards. He says he's the present and the future of WCW. He'll end up winning the World War III to become new champion. He also takes some pot shots at Macho Man, Jimmy Hart. I like Jimmy Hart as a heel. I always did. I never liked him as Hogan's good guy. Not because I don't like Hulk Hogan. I thought Jimmy Hart was a way better heel, I thought.
Well, he spent most of his time as a heel. So, you know, he perfected that to a craft. You know, having him as a good guy, I think it's just kind of I don't want to say it's out of his realm, because I think, you know, as time passed, like, he was becoming more acceptable as a face guy, especially with the Megamaniacs, you know, Brutus Beefcake, you know, incident on Raw. So I think as time was going on, he was becoming better, but still his strong point was always as a heel manager.
Do you here's something I didn't know, refreshing myself watching the old Nitros leading up to this. Kevin Sullivan mentions in the promo that Jimmy Hart was his only manager. Did you catch that?
Yes.
I didn't know that. I never knew that. I thought.
I guess woman doesn't count as his manager?
I guess not. She's a valet, I guess. Woman was more of a manager to the Sandman, if you think about it.
Yeah.
She's really a valet everywhere else. She was dark. She was a
former. Well, I would say she was more of a manager with Doom.
Yeah, good point, dude. Yeah. I forgot about that. So maybe Doom and the Sandman?
Because she was the mouthpiece for Doom, because they weren't even talking when they had the mask.
You're right. Touche, pussycat.
Black masks on black guys.
February's coming.
They all look the same to me.
February's coming. Ring the bell, you fucking maniac. Anyway, the next match is for the
I'm sure there's going to be another Black Achiever Awards.
There is.
Yeah.
Actually, though, I suggest this to Lee. Uh-huh. Lee wants to replace Rage on the Freaks and Effing Geeks. I don't know if you listen to that show.
No, not really.
It's pretty good, actually. It's actually pretty good, because Double A's in it, too. But Lee wants...
Because the episodes that I have listened to, it like, I don't know, maybe because Rage was just so low energy on it.
It gets better. They have a couple. The one I'm on is fucking fantastic, by the way.
I'm not surprised by that.
But anyway, Lee wants to replace Rage as the co-host, right?
About time.
Right, exactly. Fuck you, Rage. I love you anyway. We love you. We love Rage. We're just joking. But I told Lee that he should have a contest and, like, do different guys, like, have different guys co-host with him, and then make the announcement for the new co-host on the Black Achiever Awards.
How does Rage feel about all this?
We did this on social media, too, so we gave Rage a forum, but he didn't really respond to it too well, so.
Okay, because I want to, has he responded on the show? Because if there's an episode with him bitching and moaning, I want to listen to that.
There's quite a few bitching and moanings, but
I think that's every episode, but I want to hear about specifically
Rick
about this.
And 2 weeks ago, Rick Dara and Mick Wrestling from Talk Brunch, our buddies Talk Brunch,
yeah,
they were on the show.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the whole rule is if you call in, if you're a co-host, you got to do a prank call with them.
Okay.
So Rick did it. They called some kind of fucking hotline, like singles hotline. Mick Wrestling couldn't do it, though, so they put Mick Wrestling on the spot. It's pretty funny. So Freaks and Effing Geeks every Tuesday after the rant. It's pretty good shit.
You know, Rage is he's becoming a two-time loser now. He's lost Mega Slam.
Yeah, he's losing his co-host spot.
Losing the show.
Yeah, yeah.
What else is he losing? He's not losing his virginity anytime soon.
No, not anytime soon. Not after that nonsense. But anyway, check him out. Your next match, the WCW United States Heavyweight Championship. The Crippler, the newest member of the Four Horsemen, Mr. Chris Benoit, against one of Japan's legends and statewide mainstay for a while, Kensuke Sasaki.
Yeah.
This was a pretty good match.
Yeah, and this was another, you know, the fans were kind of quiet about this one, and I'm pretty sure that's mainly because both guys were, you know, fairly new to WCW, Kensuke Sasaki. I'm trying to think. Did he really have much of a past with WCW?
Who, Kensuke Sasaki?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course he did.
I'm thinking like before that, because I mainly remember him from 95. That's where I got schooled on Kensuke Sasaki from there. I don't remember offhand if he was in WCW beforehand. Usually it was Muda, Liger, and Kabuki. And Chono, there was a previous Starrcade with Chono versus Muda for the NWA World Heavyweight Title. But regardless, this was also building into the New Japan versus WCW Starrcade, which was coming up the following month for that year of 1995. So this was for me, you know, the crowd was a bit dead at first, but you know, it built up because. Again, these guys are, you know, doing the strong style. They're doing a completely different style that's you know, for lack of a better term, foreign to the WCW fans at the Norfolk scope. So best way that I could say is, you know, this is like a new thing for this crowd. It's building up into, you know, a typical USA versus Japan kind of thing at Starrcade. But I feel, regardless, you know, these guys pulled off the Mega Powers match of the night, along with the Joshi tag match.
Yeah. So,
Heenan is already on the Kool-Aid.
Yeah,
calling Chris Benoit the Canada's greatest athlete, forgetting about Iron Mike Sharp. So, and Sonny Ono is also joining them on the mic for a bit.
The not even self-professed, he is the king of the selfie.
Yeah, he innovated the selfie. He was doing it way before everybody else.
That's our boy right there.
I remember if you took a selfie with your cheap cardboard box Kodak disposable camera, you look like an idiot.
Yeah, now it's
now it's like literally, like, I remember if you took like a selfie of yourself with any of that shit, you did look like an idiot.
People called you an idiot.
Yeah, because it was kind of like you didn't have any friends. It was just a photo of you by yourself with you taking it. It's like, oh, you weren't hanging out with somebody so they could take a photo of you? How come you're just in the photo by yourself? You know, shit like that. Now, you could be alone in this society and post photos of yourself.
And you can get a – my wife has a selfie stick, dude.
Yeah, and it's totally fine.
It's totally fine.
The tables have turned.
The tables have definitely turned.
Yeah.
For the worst.
The only way that you could be cool doing a selfie back in 1995 is if you were coming down the aisle with a Japanese champion, either Kensuke Sasaki or Ultimo Dragon with 10 belts, and being on Nitro or WCW event coming down the aisle, and it's completely fine.
I took way too many notes for this match, Dave.
Okay.
So I'm not going to read them all.
You need to do some sort of like bullet points. Yeah. You're writing like a novel. Your notes are Moby Dick over here.
What's that one book, that 900 page book?
Was it
not War of the Worlds? It's Tale of Two Cities, right? Isn't that like a fucking novel?
Loving no
not Loving Hip Hop.
No, no, isn't like, that like a made for TV
yeah,
movie?
Exactly. No, it's I think it's like a Tale of Two Cities. Right? Oh, no, War and Peace. War and Peace. Okay. No, I
wanted to say Love and War, but it's like, but either way, I haven't read that book, but still.
You're right. It's a long book.
Yeah, you got War and Peace over here for World War III.
All right, so let's go to the last paragraph.
World War III and Peace.
there's the name of the episode.
Yeah.
There's the name of the episode.
Yeah.
Okay. Benoit slides out of a suplex at one point, goes for the Rolling Germans with no reaction to then Sasuke elbows out of a third and gets a clothesline in. Sasuke wants a tombstone, but Benoit counters it the fourth time somebody counted a tombstone on his card.
Yeah.
Well,
a tombstone piledriver is more of a staple move in Japanese wrestling.
Yes, it is. But Benoit counters his own, spikes him down. Benoit hits a diving headbutt from the top. The leg cover gets a two count. Benoit brings him up to the top and hits a Frankensteiner for the two. The crowd is just as dead as this. I can't fucking believe it. The crowd killed me in this match, dude.
Yeah.
Sasuke shrugs off everything because it's strong style.
Yeah.
The inner beginnings of Ring of Honor. Blocks a kick and power bombs Benoit down with a one-arm tornado bomb.
Yeah.
That was fucking dope.
Yeah.
Sasuke then says that's it. He goes for a stranglehold. Z, but Benoit quickly gets on the ropes. Benoit tries to close on it, but Sasuke no-sells it and plows Benoit with a Lariato!
Yep.
Sasuke ends with the Northern Lights bomb and retains the title at 10 minutes even.
This was an awesome match.
I took way too many fucking notes for a 10-minute match. However,
these are my notes. Look at my notes compared to your notes.
Shut up.
Mine is like the move.
Shut up.
And maybe I write down who does it.
Fucking judge me, bastard. Yeah, but 10-minute
bullet
match.
Points, Phil. Bullet points.
Yeah, you're right, Dave. I'm sorry. You're right. You're absolutely right. I can't even argue with that. Bullet points next time. Macho Man.
Sure, the printer at work will be happy too.
The printer at work would definitely be happy that I'm not killing any more trees.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. Fantastic match, though. Thank God. I didn't read all my notes, so I saved you guys. It was cool. Again, seeing Benoit lose is not very often at this point.
He wasn't losing very often. Whenever he was having a match on Nitro, whether it's against Eddie Guerrero, or I'm trying to think of who did he normally face, because a lot of times you saw like the same matches. I know at the beginning he was facing Guerrero like every other match and
Guerrero
destroying him.
Well, he had a nice little program with Ric Flair too, Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah. Guerrero was like almost like a go-to guy for Flair.
We mentioned that a few months ago that Eric Bischoff, that was his plan.
Yeah.
That he wanted Eddie in that role, and Eddie did it well. So God bless. Rest in peace, by the way. We just recently had the anniversary.
Yeah.
All right, your next match was the Macho Man Randy Savage Lex Luger match.
Yeah.
So take us into that.
Again, Mean Gene is interviewing Macho Man before the match.
Savage's arm is all taped up.
And, in the previous interview with Hogan, Sting, and Macho Man, Hogan says the arm is 100%. It's never been any better.
That's right.
Of course not. So, Macho Man says, what it is what it is. And Gene asked him, about this match, are you jittery? And Macho Man says, I'm always jittery. It's part of my personality.
Yeah.
So, these guys have been going back and forth. They've had quite a few matches on previous pay-per-views. We talked about them facing each other on Halloween Havoc 95.
Yep.
They faced each other a bunch of times on Nitro. So the feud is continuing. And normally Macho Man was coming on the short end of the stick. And this time, as the match starts, Macho Man is just a house of fire. He is ripping Lex Luger a new asshole. Lex Luger is not getting in any offense whatsoever during this match. Macho Man is just, bringing him pillar to post. Finally, Macho Man hits him with the body slam, goes to the top rope for the flying elbow drop. Lex Luger is done. Until his manager, Jimmy the Mouth of the South, Hart, gets up on the apron and distracts the referee.
Yeah, Macho then shit-cans Luger again.
Yeah.
Back into the guardrail.
Yeah, so they end up on the outside. Macho Man throws Lex Luger between the ref and Jimmy Hart, kind of breaks up that little thing going on. Macho Man is about to whip Lex Luger into the, ring number 3. It doesn't matter. About to whip him right into the ring apron. Lex Luger reverses it, throws Macho Man in there. The tide has officially turned for the match. Luger is finally in control. Beats the hell out of him, racks him on the outside, brings him back into the ring, hits him with the armbar on that already
heavily bandaged arm. Heavily bandaged fine arm, by the way.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 100%. Macho Man passes out.
Yep, ref checks him and he's out at 5 minutes and 28 seconds.
Yes, so this is quite a short match. Lex Luger is not letting go of the armbar. One of Chris Jericho's 2000 moves. The bell is ringing. Who the hell is going to get Lex Luger off of the Macho Man? Sting.
That's right. Sorry,
Dave. You should just have the cursor on there at all times.
You're right.
For the rest of
Sting.
Well, he's fighting the next match, right?
Yeah, so Sting.
Yeah, that's right.
Sting.
Versus Ric Flair for the 400th time, which is really wasn't a bad match.
No. Well, before we get into that, okay. I want to mention that you know, Sting gets in there, whispers a few words to Lex Luger.
I love you.
And he lets go of the armbar.
Lex, let go, baby. I'll take care of you later. I'll do my Black Scorpion
voice. I'll get you a raise from Eric Bischoff.
Listen, I'll get you a raise, and I'll do my Black Scorpion voice for you. Listen, listen, listen. Steve. You like that, Daddy? Anyway, get it. Go ahead. Sorry.
So we have Ric Flair going against Sting for the millionth time.
That's right. I like this match. Steve. It's a good match.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll stand to say, like, they've had some good matches after the Clash 88.
Yeah, they had that 400 of them after the Clash, dude.
But for me, I feel the Clash 88 has been like the only great match that they've had against each other.
Sitting right there on my rack.
And I just feel like every match of theirs after that was just kind of like the same match.
Yeah, it was. Listen, Steamboat and Flair had the same thing going.
I understand, but
if you look,
those had a slightly different flavor to them.
You're looking for something different with Sting and Flair,
you're not going
to
get it.
I hate to break it to you. You're not going to. But again,
they found their groove and they stuck with it. But I don't know. Maybe you know, this is just me speaking, but I just see it more so with these guys than I would see with, you know, Flair versus Steamboat or anything like that.
I'll go as far as say this: if you were watching a compilation disc of just Ric Flair and matches, then you would probably get 85% of the same thing. I'll give them the 15% of the finish or like the build up to the end.
Yeah.
But you'll get the same match. It's not terrible.
No.
Unless you've watched 2 hours of it and you're bored of it already. When they review, listen, they fought on Nitro, that last Nitro.
Yeah, I like that match.
That was fun.
They fought on Impact too.
You're right.
You know what? I a lot of people shit on that match. I didn't think it was that bad.
It wasn't terrible. It's not. When you have two guys that can go, it's not. Flair said Sting was one of his favorite opponents.
Yeah.
I don't have an issue with them doing the same thing because it's at least if it's a shitty card.
Uh huh.
And this really wasn't a shitty card.
Yeah.
So to speak, if it was though, you'll get a high spot out of that. You'll get a you'll get like a nice refreshing, like, oh, this match won't suck at least.
Yeah, I'd probably say besides the Clash 88 match, I would say my favorite Sting Flair matches are probably
Future Shock.
Future Shock.
Yep.
The Clash before Bash at the Beach 94.
Yep.
And there's another one I'm thinking about. Maybe Great American Bash 90. Maybe. That wasn't that.
But Crow Sting was good too when he fought Flair, I think, when he came back and fought Flair.
I don't remember that.
He fought Hogan. I think he fought Sting. He fought Flair as well. One of my favorite parts of this match is Ric Flair. He gets a couple of chops and he hits Sting with a knee. He struts over to the corner and tells the guy in the front row to suck it. Flair is like, at one point, Sherry and your uncle, Rob Parker, are in the aisle.
Uncle Rob
is looking.
Yeah, Colonel Rob Parker.
Looking down the aisle, you know? What's up with that?
I don't know. I don't know why they came out. Like, I know that they had, like, the love angle going on.
Don't you ask them these things at fucking Thanksgiving? Like, Uncle Rob, why didn't you, while we were at the, down the, I'm doing this fucking...
Why did you come out for 30 seconds to look around the scope and then walk back out?
Why'd you say all those racist things about Harlem Heat and then go manage them?
Listen, let the past lay in the past.
Exactly. All right.
You know, let's not talk about Brickhouse Brown either. So.
Oh, yeah. Double A brought that up again on a rant last week. It was pretty funny.
So anyway...
The best
part. This had some spots from the Clash 88 match. You know, Stinger misses the Stinger splash on the guardrail.
Yeah, hits the chops and poses, of course. Sting hulks up again, which he does all the time now. Flair is oblivious to this. Flair hits more chops, does no damage. Flair powders out to another ring.
They went from like the second ring back into the first ring, then into the third ring.
But for the third time, Sting press slams him.
Yeah,
and runs him over a bunch of clotheslines.
Yeah, that's another thing I don't like about Sting Flair matches because like he's constantly like press slamming. You know, like for an Arn Anderson match, like it's okay. or Ole Anderson. Like, okay, I don't know what to do. Let me go back to the arm, you know?
But wait a minute. But
Sting is like, let me go back to the gorilla press slam on Flair.
So are you more pissed off at the constant press slams or the constant chops by Flair?
I'm never angry at a Ric Flair chop.
Okay. I just want to clarify. Because there are people who are like, oh, he fucking chops 4,000 times. But
I'm more pissed off at
the press slams.
The press slams. Yeah, hey, okay. I know you can press slam the guy, but like, how many times do you have to press slam him during a match?
Okay.
Because that's like an impact move. You know, a chop is just kind of like, it's just a strike. But when you're going for an impact move, like a gorilla press slam, it's I feel like one is good, one and done. Stick to that. I'm fine with that. But, you know, three, come on. Ultimate Warrior wasn't doing three gorilla press slams during a match. He did one, and the match was over.
Okay, fair enough.
Who ready? Else did gorilla press slams?
Who else?
I've been watching...
Royal Warrior Animal did a ton of them.
During multiple ones during the match?
Yeah. Especially in squash matches. Ask the Monkey Brawlers how many times they will fucking press slam in a match.
That's different. It's the Monkey Brawlers. they were there to get their asses handed.
So if he does it on Stan Lane, it's okay. He does it on a Monkey, he does it on Stan Lane, it's not okay. He does it on a Monkey Brother, it's okay.
Yeah. Because the Monkey Brothers were there. They were just whipping boys. I don't know how those guys can even stand.
You're something else, Mega Powers.
I don't know how those guys can even stand, let alone like live and breathe. How come there's no like iron lungs attached to them?
Who, the Monkees?
The beatings that they took were legendary.
I guarantee you.
I'm sure Pinhead from Hellraiser would say their pain is legendary.
Your pain is legendary.
Yeah.
What do you call it? No, I think the boys just got them like extra massages and shit.
Those guys had to had been getting something.
Probably took them to the Chinatown of Atlanta, Georgia. And
yeah,
got them like, you know, happy endings all the time
for the beatings that those guys took.
Yeah, Monkey Brothers should get. We should do a Monkey Brothers tribute to them. We should.
Try to get them on the show.
Oh wow, good idea. They'll never come on. Nobody comes on our show unless we fucking get lucky.
Sonny Ono.
We got Sonny Ono. We got a couple. We got Little Egypt. Anyway, okay. World War III. And peace. No. Brandon Tony on ring one. Dusty Rhodes and Eric Bischoff on ring two. Dusty is wearing the largest red leather coat known to man, by the way.
Yes. That was like a staple of his during this time, especially when he went to NWO.
Oh, yeah. He was dressed to impress, baby. He said, this match will go down in infinity at the greatest pay-per-view of all time. And he actually said infinite, not infinite. Chris Cruz, who? Remember Crispy? He's the host of the morning show with Terry Funk. Chris Cruz and Larry Zbysko are on ring three. David Buffer does his 60 men.
Bruce Buffer.
No.
David Buffer is the guy from UFC.
No. Oh, yeah. No, David Buffer.
Bruce Buffer is the original.
Right. I'm sorry. Yeah, Bruce Buffer. It's a buffer. Whatever. 60 men, three rings, 60 men, almost a quarter million pounds of humanity.
Brett Clark.
So how you want to do this?
Well, just like any other battle royal, this thing was a fucking clusterfuck. I'm not going to go in depth about like the first, this thing went how long? About like 40 minutes long?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you right now. Fuck, is my notes? Do I have a lot of notes on
it? Well, I'm going to talk while you look through your, World War III in peace.
It went, 29:41.
Wow, that's pretty quick.
So you were close. You said 40 minutes.
I think one of the shortest Royal Rumbles was about like 20, 29 minutes, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
I know in the 20-minute range. true to form, it was a clusterfuck. It's three rings, you know, as I posted on the Facebook page. They had three different camera angles going on at once on the screen, which for me, like, that's like annoying as hell because – first of all, there's nothing really significant going on. It's just guys punching each other and trying to throw each other out. So not much is going on. Occasionally there were like a few things where like towards the end, I thought it was pretty cool that there was a point where who was getting pulled out? It was Kensuke Sasaki was getting pulled out by Brian Pillman, and Hawk was trying to pull him back in. First of all, Kensuke Sasaki is a heel in WCW, and Hawk is a face. And they acknowledged on the broadcast that these two men, are Hawk and Kensuke Sasaki, are tag team partners in Japan. They were the Hellraisers.
The Hellraisers, yes.
Yeah. Power Warrior and Hawk Warrior. So, yeah. So that was pretty cool that they acknowledged themselves as a team. There's like a few things that kind of like was like popping through my head while I was watching this as guys were getting thrown out. Like there's a point where Hogan just casually throws out Kevin Sullivan. I'm like, these guys are feuding. This is like a huge feud that's going on right now. How come they're not making a bigger deal out of it?
Bobby Heenan calls it an Attica prison riot. That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, the Horsemen and Sting brawled to the floor, but you can't tell because the camera's on them. The Yeti got eliminated, and you couldn't see him on the screen.
You could kind of see it, but
you kind of. DDP and One Man Gang do nothing about it. That was pretty funny, too.
Yeah. Lex Luger is like outside of the ring for a good chunk of this battle royal. Yeah. And he's just hanging outside fighting everybody.
You mentioned Hogan, Tosser, Sullivan, and crickets because nobody said anything.
Yeah.
There were just too many fucking people to see what was going on, as you just made.
Yeah. You know, trying to divide one television screen into three different, like, little screens. And then, of course, like on the side, they have the World War III logo. So you have, like, these, you know, this Attica prison riot, as you called it. Or
Bobby
Heenan calls it, rather.
That, yeah.
Going on, and you know, it's just like trying to see like you know significant points in the battle royal. It was just way too hard for pretty much most of it until pretty much towards the end. Another thing that I thought was kind of interesting was Hogan threw out Paul Orndorff.
Yeah,
and I was like, they never faced each other in WCW.
Yeah,
I wish they, you know, maybe like on like main events or on Pro or Saturday Night, because they didn't. You know, Nitro was just fairly new. I'm surprised that they never crossed paths, even just for like a one-off. That would have been cool, but
yeah.
But they don't mention.
So let's get to the end of it. Since we don't fucking do my fucking power notes here. Let's see. Hogan clotheslines on Anderson over the top rope for a nice little pop.
Actually, wait a second. This was a good spot.
Okay.
Because Flair was on the ropes.
Yeah.
He crotched on the turnbuckle.
Yep.
Sting slingshots Arn Anderson into Flair, which eliminates Flair.
Right. Flair's pissed off and makes a scene.
Yeah, and then Hogan clotheslines Arn Anderson over the top rope.
But
so.
Luger and Sting team up to choke to chop down a Giant.
Yeah.
And Giant and Luger are on the same team.
Technically
they are.
Yeah. Because there was that gray area. He had Hart as his manager, but he was not a part of the Dungeon of Doom.
Right. Hogan is then pulled under the ropes by Macho Man.
Yeah.
Right? And as Macho Man dumps out the One Man Gang, the ref declares Macho Man the winner, right?
Yeah, because he did not see Hulk Hogan.
He didn't see Hogan go under the ropes. Hogan is, of course, aghast, and he whines, and Brain, of course. Bobby Heenan's right on top of it. Hogan tries sucking up to the crowd.
I thought it was funny because Hogan knows that the bell has rung. And he continues to fight the Giant and body slams him while the bell's ringing.
Yeah.
Because I just want to say this about Hulk Hogan. It seems like anytime something is going wrong with Hulk Hogan and things are not going his way, it seems like he's always trying to overcompensate for whatever isn't supposed to be happening to him.
And now you know why I hate him.
Yeah, so
that's probably the main reason why I hate
him. So he loses the big 60-man World War III Battle Royal, so he has to body slam the Giant, which is an impressive feat still, while the bell is ringing, just so the attention can still be on him. but anyway, so Macho Man is declared the winner of World War III. Hulk Hogan has to rain on his fucking parade as he's being interviewed by Mean Gene. Mean Gene's like, hey, it's time to celebrate. But of course, there's no time for celebration because when you are the World Heavyweight Champion of the WCW... You're taking on all comers, especially a whiny sack of shit like Hulk Hogan.
Exactly.
That chump Hulk Hogan lusting over Elizabeth can't congratulate the Macho Man Randy Savage for winning another world championship.
Leave it to Dave to bring up the old shit.
Yeah.
Fucking Dave's still bitter about the Mega Powers breakup.
Yeah, what was it? I thought it was funny where Hulk Hogan pleads with the crowd and says, hey, didn't you guys see me get, you know, pulled out from underneath the bottom rope? And the fans, you know, they're, you know, cheering and applauding Hogan. And Mean Gene says, I don't think that's going to stand up in court. So even Gene isn't with Hulk Hogan on this one.
So that's World War III in peace.
Yeah. So
it wasn't terrible.
And no, it wasn't that bad. It was pretty good.
I mean, initially we were like, oh, man, this is going to suck, right?
Yeah, because we haven't watched it
in 20 years.
Yeah, and there's like one episode that we had of our show recently where we're talking about it, and I'm like, I know I want to do this because I know it's going to be funny.
I mean, it was funny. It was entertaining.
Yeah,
it's
still funny. Yeah, like I know it's going to be a good pick, but there's just like sometimes when you think of some of these things, like, man, I have to watch this now? That's 3 hours of my day.
Listen, let's get something straight here, and you've been here for 3 years now. The greatest part about this podcast, besides the greatness that is you and I, is that we could turn chicken shit into chicken salad.
Yeah.
Even your shitty Virgil fucking episode was gold.
Yeah.
Okay? So let's not get that twisted. Now, yeah. Again, I'm toot my own horn a lot this fucking episode, and I really don't care.
Toot toot?
Yeah, I'm like heel Phil tonight.
Yeah.
However, the concept was cool.
Yeah.
The three rings, the concept was amazing. However,
well, anytime WCW did something with an extra ring, especially back then,
it was
entertaining as hell. Like, you couldn't wait for it. It was just like so novel at the time. Like nowadays, like if somebody were to do something like that, it just seems like too gimmicky, and you know, it just seems like something that's straying away from actually having a good product, which not too many people can boast about these days.
The concept was great. I thought the production of it was over their head.
Yeah.
I don't think they were well prepared for what was to have 60 guys in three rings.
No.
The commentary was great. It was fun
to
have those guys interact, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool, having, you know, play-by-play for each ring.
That was cool because it made you feel like you're a sports fan.
Yeah.
And, like, when they do, like, the NFL has those pre-shows and they have guys in different parts of the world. Let's take you now to, you know, Chicago and we have What's-A-Face. And
yeah.
Like, that kind of – that was cool. I like that aspect. I think – As the they had, I think, four of them, I think from 95 to 98, or three of them, 95 to 98.
Yeah.
I think as they moved forward with them, the production value of the actual main event got a little better.
Yeah.
Without watching them, I think I'm guesstimating that, because I think the first one was like, all right.
Well, we'll have more World War III's down the road. I thought it was funny that they kept calling it World War III year after year.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be World War IV after the last one?
They just took the premise of the, obviously, from American history. So, I mean, I thought that
three rings, three wars.
I have no issue with that at all. I really don't. If you want to get technical, yeah, it could have been World War 4, 5, and 6, whatever.
Yeah.
But then again, they started off Star Wars with Episode 4, 5, and 6. Nobody said anything. So nobody questioned it.
Nobody knew that there was a 1, 2, and a 3 before.
Fucking 30 years before the prequels even came out, you know? Okay. So that's pretty much our throwback this week, man.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool, and I think moving forward they had really better grip on production wise, and the talent's always the talent. I mean, the talent makes the match. So when you dump your entire locker room into three rings, you know,
you got the Barrio Brothers.
Yeah, you got the Super Destroyers. You
could have had Barrio Brother Fidel.
You could have had Mr. JL.
Could have had Cobra as the new World Heavyweight Champion.
Mr. JL, Dave.
Big
The
Yeti,
Big Black Bart.
Pistol Pez Watley could have won a World Heavyweight Championship.
Not Shaska Watley.
For the four or five that he was in.
So, all right, man. That was fun.
Yeah.
You want to start wrapping this bitch up?
Yeah, let's pay homage to another fallen...
Yeah,
fallen personality of the entertainment world.
Woke up this morning to my wife reading the New York Times, as she does every morning on her phone. She goes, Scott Weiland's dead. I'm like, really? And she was like, didn't he die already? Because he's been a really bad drug abuser for about 20 years. But guy was super fucking talented. Velvet Revolver, Stone Temple Pilots. He did a bunch of mega bands.
Yeah.
One of my favorite records from him. I won't play that. I'm going to play Sex Type Thing as we go out, but... One of my favorite songs from him is actually a cover song on the Inconium Led Zeppelin tribute album.
Mm.
He does a cover of Dancing Days, and it's fantastic.
Mm.
So another one of our heroes, Fallen, which is sad.
Yeah.
song.
One of my favorites has always been Interstate Love Song.
Yeah, mine's mine's Dead and Bloated, but I didn't want to play that.
Yeah.
My favorite STP song is Dead and Bloated, but I thought it was inappropriate. You know? But that was the opening song to their best album.
Yeah.
You know, that's it was
core.
Yeah. So anyway. We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. We are on EM Radio and on TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com. Support all our friends. We have a lot of friends, man. Thumbstick Ninjas, Talk Brunch, Don Tony Kevin Castle Wrestling Soup, Midnight Jury.
Soon to be revamped Freaks and Effing Geeks.
Freaks and Effing Geeks. All of our friends, go support them. They're on the website, TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com. We have t-shirts. We sold two shirts over the weekend.
Nice.
So thank you guys for buying shirts. ProWrestlingTees.com/TurnbuckleThrowbacks. We have four designs. I'm hopefully working on getting a designer to work on some shirts that we don't have to sell on the internet for cheap, because it's all, you know, so free. I just paid for the website for the year, so that's a fucking chump of change now. What else we got going on? Go on Twitter. We're on @TBuckleTBacks. Want to mail us, TurnbuckleThrowbacks1@gmail.com, and on Periscope. They're going to open a Periscope eventually while we're broadcasting. Next time you're in
studio. Well, next time we do something really crazy like Mega Slam.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think what else is going on? I already plugged all the upcoming events that we have going on.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Am I missing anything? I don't know.
Do we announce what the throwback for the Malcolm Xmas is going to be, or do you want to wait on that? Or?
We'll wait on it.
Okay.
We'll wait on it.
It's good. It's going to be a really obscure one, but hopefully we'll be unearthing this to the populace at large.
Yeah, absolutely. So don't forget to and listen, guys, all joking aside, the current climate, and we're not going to bring up the shit anyway, but take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Fucking be nice to people. Come on. Respect yourself. Respect yourself. Really.
Hey, you owe me an Under the Boardwalk.
Do I?
Yes.
When?
Because we're playing STP right now, and I had Under the Boardwalk planned for the go home song.
Listen, you just show up for the show. I'll take care. I'll take care of the production value of this whole scheme of things. All joking aside, though, really, guys. As I always say, avoid the clap. Don't get arrested. Hug your mom. Be kind to animals. Don't say the N word unless it's Nancy. Shout out to Nancy, whoever you are. And
Nancy Sullivan.
Yeah, really. And just really, just be cool, man. The sandbox is way fucking big enough now.
Yeah, come on, Carlito Caribbean, cool this.
Yeah,
cool your jets.
Really, guys. Just it's not worth it, really.
Yeah.
On behalf of the Mega Powers on the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Ray, bidding you adieu. See you guys next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. And say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.